It's a sign that the soul of India is awakening. As Sri Aurobindo said that nations have a soul. This is something long back some people have mentioned. And when he said that nations have a soul, even now many people raise their eyebrows. It's okay. Even there is a very interesting little story of Swami Ramdas that someone said, "You are saying that you have a soul." So he said, "No, I am not saying I have a soul. I am saying I am a soul. I have a body." So it's a change of perspective. So when it is said that nation has a soul, it's not just a euphemism or a emotional something, but if we go back to the origin now, because of paucity of time, I am not entering into how India has been formed. It's very amazing. And if you see right from the Puranas, how the body of India evolved, but even before that, even before material existence has come into being, if you read the Puranas, we'll see that the soul of India is already there. Now it's a long story. So, and slowly, the body of India, the mind of India undergoes through successive changes. You know, it was known once as Jambudvip. Then it's known as Aryavart, Bharat. Now, of course, we have used in the constitution Bharat, that is India, which is very nice. At least we recognize that it's not just a modern nation. It's a nation, one of the oldest civilizations, which has continued. But what is interesting about Bharat, that is India, evident, is that through all the changes that have happened, there is something which has always remained alive and active in India, and that is its spiritual thread. It's something amazing. Read the Greek civilization, the Egyptian civilization, the Roman, all of them were mighty in their own time, and they're all forgotten. As modernity came, different civilizations came, it went into the background, and eventually today if you ask an Egyptian or a Greek, what about your gods? In Greece they still have the statue of some of the gods, which they just, you know, laugh about, which is okay, but they don't connect with them, because now the whole thing has changed. In India, despite 1,000 years, at least I'm leaving aside the time of, you know, Lalita Aditya and all, you know, when you see the onslaught in Jammu, Kashmir and other areas. But at least 1,000 years, there have been different invasions for the last 500 years, 600 years, maybe almost India was never conquered fully, but many parts of India. There was an attempt to subjugate, attempt to convert, and while it succeeded in all other nations, the soul of India fought back. It brought out heroes and warriors and sages, and it is coming back. If at all anyone wants to understand that, well, is there something like a soul which remains the same or grows through all the changes in the body? India is a living example. You go back 2000 years back, 3000 years back, we still have the same spiritual thought. So it is a special country, a special nation with a particular mission. As Sri Aurobindo says, in this Chatur Yuga at least, it is India that has been chosen. So as cycles change, we don't know what happened earlier and what may happen later on. But India is the soul, not just of, you know, people who reside here. It's the soul of the world. And if you look at the history of India, how it has broken off as a piece from Africa. I've had the fortune of seeing that place where the rift began, and it has connected. It's almost like it's a connecting link. Even its shape looks, of course, we can conceive of Goddess Durga with the hands on both sides, dipping into the ocean, its feet, like Kalidas describes. We can also look at it like a heart, which is the center of the world. And today, if we look at the world scenario all over, so we'll see that there is a lot of, you know, religion seems like a spent force. All other rational ways of looking at life, philosophies have changed. But very strangely and paradoxically and understandably, Sanatan Dharma is beginning to not only rise up, it is entering into the mainstream. Recently there was a program which was covered by many major channels, and they have nothing to do with, you know, revival of Hindu culture. But these channels showed how the Gen Z of today is connecting with Sanatan Dharma. And when we speak about India and the soul of India, which Vande Mataram is about, we cannot but disengage it from Sanatan Dharma. It's because the two are just as there is a soul and its dharma, swadharma. So the soul of India's dharma is Sanatan Dharma. And frankly, if we look at the enormous diversity in the world and creation, and so wonderful that we have diversity in this world. So the only thought which can connect them is Sanatan Dharma, because it connects the diversity, it takes into account the deepest aspects of existence, the spiritual, the divine, and it connects it with every aspect and sphere of life. So it is not a chance accident that we also witness the tableau. It is all very interesting that from in the last 10 years, we see an uprising and change. Now, sometimes we may attribute it to politics, but politics itself becomes an instrument of the divine at a certain point of time. So what we see is a divine action which is going on in the world, and the resurgence of Sanatan Dharma in new forms, because forms will change. So we should not expect our children to go to temple and do that traditional puja. No, but the core takes new forms. So recently we had a Gen Z, singing, Hanuman Chalisa and all that. And people had different opinions that were, it is no more that sacred. It has entered into the realm of the profane. But in a certain sense, I had a different feeling altogether. I said, who else but the divine name should enter every house, in parties, in everything? Why not? After all, if we go back to the original sense of Sanatan Dharma, the Chatushpad Brahman, then even this most outward world is nothing else but an extension of the Brahman. So it's something beautiful, and as we celebrate Vande Mataram, we have to remember that this is not just a revival which is historical, and we all take happy, some of us feel happy, some resist after all, through all this mutual resistance and opposition, truth takes its claim. It's very interesting how the divine works. See, even this Vande Mataram song, just now, recently, it has been in the news. So, a lot of television bites, some people, we won't sing it, it is not about us, we don't have. Paradoxically, this is going to only increase the awareness and the aspiration. Now, so because otherwise it would have just gone the way, okay, it is one of those historical events. But now, because of the opposition, very few quarters, very frankly, we should not take these things very seriously, because it is the song of the soul of India. So it's very interesting that Sri Aurobindo, in his earliest writings, speaks of Vande Mataram as the national anthem. He doesn't use the word national song. He says it's the national anthem. But there was a debate in the assembly, and they decided that no, they don't want to keep it as a national anthem, because it has certain elements which are, apparently, anyways, objections are not really about the details, they are about a mindset. If I don't like something, I'll create objections. So let's leave that aside. So till now, even wherever Vande Mataram, though it was accepted as a national song, the two verses which come later on, Tvam hi Durga Dasya Praharana Dharini, this was not sung, because it was given a religious connotation. And yet, and this is something very beautiful, that it is, this event is happening here in the playground ashram, not only we have a complete map of United India, we have been singing Vande Mataram complete, all the six stanzas, right from beginning. So the mother was asked about it, that why you have made this map of India, is it like pre-partition? She says, no, the map was made after the partition. So she was asked, how come? Because India has, partition has taken place. She says, yes, the body has been dismembered, but the soul of India is one and indivisible. And this partition, Sri Aurobindo said in his message, by whatever means, the partition must and will go, because it is a creation of falsehood and fear. Now this was in birthday, India's Independence Day message in 47. 20 years back, if somebody told that, you know, Aurobindo has said partition must and will go, well, it must have been a holy sentiment. Today, it's so real. How is it? Because the truth of things always, this is the beauty that India has taught, one of the greatest lessons of history, through all its stories, through all the mantra. In fact, in that context, before I come to this lesson of history, Aurobindo was asked about Bande Mataram as a mantra. He said, yes, and it is a mantra given for today. When India is free, it will discover the new mantra. So, what could be the new mantra? Well, when Mother was asked in 71 about the mantra to help India during the war which was taking place, she gave the mantra, Supreme Lord, Eternal Truth, let us obey Thee alone and live according to truth. What is this mantra? Satyameva jayate nanritam satyena pantha vitato devyana. And we see that this is also there in the assembly, and it is part of the Indian ethos. So now we see the age of truth dawning upon, and with Bande Mataram, this Satyameva Jayate. So this is what has started, because truth ultimately, if we read Mahabharata, Ramayana, any of the stories in India, it's something very interesting that whatever may happen in the passage, truth has the last word. So people often say, sir, all this is holy sentiment, what, where is the evidence? Because nowadays, you know, evidence based. So I say modern world is the evidence. So what is the evidence? Just go back 100 years back. It was said that the sun of British Empire never set. Isn't it? Kabhi nahi, kahi nahi, dubta hai. Today, look at how the nation which once ruled half of the world apparently is so desperately almost sinking, trying to hold on to itself. And to hold on to its existence, it is coming all the way to India seeking help. Recent events. It's strange and true. Because this is the eternal truth, that ultimately whatever upheavals, and in the life of nation, 100 years, 200 years is nothing. Actually, it takes 300, 400 years for civilizational shifts. Some people say that it takes about 400 years. Because life of nations is much, much longer. Like America is adolescent. So India is wise, and it has gone and come back like the phoenix. India has that capacity to go into the flames and rise again purified. That's why Aurobindo, when he talks about India long back in Bande Mataram, one of the writing which one of my favorites is the parables of Mahadev and Sati. And he says that how Sati dies, she throws herself in the flames and is reborn as Parvati. So Parvati is now not just on, Sati has emotional love for Mahadev. Tremendous love. But love is fine. But she must have the power, the strength. So there is a whole, Kalidas has made, you know, Vikram Urvashi and Parvati, Kumar Sambhavam, and the tapasya of Parvati. And Aurobindo speaks of the tapasya or the yoga of the Indian nation. So we can say that with Bande Mataram, as it started resounding in the galleries of the Indian mind, corridors of the Indian mind and heart, the tapasya or the yoga of India started. Before that, it was literally mriyaman, almost like Shav. What was happening? Like Shiva moving with Sati, all the quarters, engaged in tapasya. So we see that Indian yogis were largely speaking of otherworldliness, and they were engaged in a kind of tapasya because they have to keep the alak, the spiritual fire alive. This was the great task given to them. So they were keeping it alive. But they were not connecting with the world. It was maya. But now we see that again, at that time, and Aurobindo of course is at the head priest during that moment, 1905, when Bengal was partitioned. And that time he starts awakening the soul of India. Many people ask that, why did Aurobindo withdraw in 1910? He came to Pondicherry. In 5 years, the soul of India had been awakened. The rest was a long foregone conclusion. That's how he says that it is decided. Those 5 years you awaken, and it's in life. As a psychiatrist, I know I deal with so many people. Once you awaken that central thing, whatever else may happen, good things, bad things, problematic things, this is going to grow and assert. And eventually, Satyameva Jayate, the soul eventually wins. Of course, there is the struggle, there is the fight, there is the battle. All that is part of the journey. So that is the time when we see the mantra is again given to India, and then there is a long passage which continues. It goes into the background, then it's accepted as a national song, not yet the anthem. But there is a difference. What is the difference between the national anthem and the national song? All Tagore is great, no doubt about it. Everybody is great in their own way. So the national anthem speaks of the body of the nation. Punjab, Sindh, Gujarat, Maratha, Dravid, Utkal, Banga, Vindh, Himachal, Yamuna, Ganga. So there is it speaks of the body of the nation, and there is a Bhagavidata somewhere up there. Bande Mataram speaks of the soul and the inner being of the nation. Tum hi Durga. And the mother says every nation has a soul which is like a living presence, and she says that for India it is Durga. So Durga is not just of course we have many forms of Durga. So she is the soul of India. She represents the soul of India, and he was invoking the soul of India, because once the soul awakens, do whatever we may, it is eventually going to grow and be victorious. That's the whole story of Sri Krishna being born in the prison. Or if you take a more modern paradoxical example, Shankaracharya, his mother tries to stop him. No, don't go. And eventually, ultimately, the soul carries the script of destiny. And this soul is what Sri Aurobindo was awakening during the 5 years, during the while he was in Kolkata. Once the soul awakened, it could not sleep. It became the national song. As I said, the difference between the anthem and the song. Anthem is about the body and a vague Bhagavidata. But the song, national song of Vande Mataram, is about the soul of India. Now people often say, but where is all that beauty which is snatched away? That beauty is the inner truth of India, which Swami Vivekananda has in his vision. When he is moving in the Himalayas and he feels that, well, he is also distressed by the condition of India. Then Mother India appears to him in a golden glory. She says, you know, if I want, I can break these chains right away. But there is a reason why she continues to wear those chains, because there have to be instruments, you have to grow, deserve, become her worthy children. So that's what we see today happening, that because she has broken the chains, she has decided to step into the forefront. She is needed for the world. I keep repeating it. Million times we can say this, that if people want hope in the world, India is the light. And this is regardless of any patriotic sentiment. I could literally prove it, because you see the ideologies and the philosophies all divisive, all centered around external progress. External progress is important, but who gives the spiritual sense to human condition? Not a religion, but this, that there is not only an individual collectivity in every nation, there is a spiritual truth which is manifesting in countless ways. So it takes into account diversity. The beauty of India and Sanatana Dharma is it takes into account diversity, which is so important. You can't have unity through uniformity. So this is the need of the hour, and this is the destiny of India. We see that in the rising of Vande Mataram, and I see it not just as a coincidence, but nothing is a coincidence in the deeper sense, but the continuation of the divine action upon this world, that now India is rising and the world is listening. Because it is foreseen and written in the book of the gods that if the world must survive and grow and evolve, the secret is with India. Jai Ma. Thank you.